Right, so the scene opens on a cave. You guys are standing there. The light hasn't been risen yet. There's darkness all around. It looks a lot, you know, a lot like my face.
Oh, no.
That's right. I need all of you to roll a constitution save.
19!
I just want to point out that we're rolling a constitution check, which is usually about stamina and health. So basically what we're saying is, we're seeing an image of Jeff's face, and we're trying to make sure we don't throw up.
Wait a minute. I have to roll a constitution check every time I see Jeff's face.
And this is exactly why we're at episode 179. Welcome, everybody, to Games Towards Profits, the show where we talk about God, gaming, and groups. I'm Jeff Romo, and I know you haven't heard my voice in a while, but I still exist. And ever so often, when I roll over in my grave and I sit up, everybody starts throwing up. I'm just kidding. Hey, Daniel, how you doing, man?
I'm doing all right, man. How you doing?
I'm doing okay.
That's great.
How about you, Mike? How are you?
I'm good. Yes, we'll go with good. I am in the throngs of pre-TavernCon craziness. So, and it's insane, too, because this year I don't have Sean in the vicinity because he and his fam up and decided that going to the complete other side of the country was a good idea.
That's right. They went to the SeaTac Metroplex. That's pretty cool.
So...
it's pretty cool.
So yes, so I'm basically saying that Sean, you know, is gonna, they're going to be at least Sean is going to be at TavernCon.
Yeah.
And I told him that he's going to owe me by making sure that he brings inroads to Mock's boarding house over there in Seattle. That is his penance.
That's not a bad payment. I mean, come on.
I'm sure I'm really having to twist his arm on that one.
There's, you know, like being dragged behind a car or having to listen to a bunch of Yanni albums.
We were talking the other day on the phone and he's like, yeah, I'm going to try to get a job there.
I just moved to a new city. I think I'm going to get a new job and it's going to be at my dream store. So, yeah.
Have you ever seen that place, by the way?
No.
I've seen online.
It is... every once in a while, I find myself saying, you know, if I had unlimited money and time, I would like to do a pilgrimage to all the world's great board game slash bar slash cafe related shenanigans. And right. Mock's Boarding House is one of them. Snakes and Lattes is another one. There's a handful of them that I want to go to. But Mock's is just, it's crazy. It is absolutely crazy, and I want to be there.
Nice. Hey, man, you know, if he can send us pictures, maybe do like some VR in there to where we can kind of go there in virtual reality. I don't know. Maybe.
But anyway, so yes, the short version is that I am doing well, but when this episode goes live, we will literally be days away from TavernCon 2018. And so I'm excited. There's a lot of stuff that's going on. Every year we try to expand. Like, we're not going to do anything insane because this is a fundraiser, and the more you expand, the more things cost. But we try to add something fun every year. So the first year we decided we were going to do the Pretense Meta Tournament, which was fun because that established our relationship with Jason Tagmeyer and the folks at Button Shy. We've now done the Paint and Take, which was great, and my buddy Brett is running that. He's actually, we're evaluating potentially doing a third session of the Paint and Take. So that,
wait,
that's,
he's only doing two sessions this year?
He only did two last year.
Man, you know, at GaryCon in one day, I had eight sessions.
Because in GaryCon, there were a significantly larger number of people there. I would love to one day have TavernCon be as big as GaryCon. I would do all sorts of things to make that happen. But anyway, so we've got that. This year we've got Sean, who is running what has quickly become a a pretty prominent war game in the tavern amongst the regulars, which I'm not going to lie, I completely understand. I found myself getting the book. I haven't gotten my cars yet, but I got the book to learn how to play. The game is Gaslands, where you mod up Hot Wheels cars. And
people are going nuts over this.
Dude, I love it.
They really are. And so I saw a cheap copy of the book, and I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to do it, because you can, for the cost of, for like an absolutely fraction of the cost of most wargaming experiences, you can literally do like a full set for you, a full set for somebody else, scenery for what's like three minis of a different wargame.
It's actually broke me a little bit, because every time I go to the store now, I hit the Hot Wheels section.
I'm not going to lie. I stopped into ShopRite the other day, and they have in the section with like kids stuff.
Yeah.
Like I had to, you know, pick up, you know, water to use for making the baby's bottles. And there's a little tiny toy section. And what was there? Hot Wheels cars. I looked. Yeah. I'm not going to lie. I looked.
Hey, if you have a Target, they've got the Adventure Hot Wheels cars for 97 cents.
Nice.
And they're really, like, they're older style cars, so they look really cool when they're modded up like that, so.
But yes, so Gaslands, we're actually going to have Sean running kind of demos of Gaslands, because it became such a hit with everybody in the tavern. So we're excited about that. That's going to be fun. There's actually, and who knows, I might have to future mic this, because we're still looking over the feasibility of this. Sean came up with an idea for something to do this year, and it's still, like, even though people responded positively when I mentioned it on Facebook, it's still kind of weird to me. Sean basically said, hey, why don't we get people to pay for tickets to potentially get into a game with me? AKA, like, me. Mike. Yeah. And at first, I'm like, that sounds like the most ridiculous thing ever.
How many people signed up?
A lot of people said that they would be happy to buy tickets to play games with me.
Yeah, it's weird like that, like, because you're a celebrity.
That's not true.
No,
that's
you
not
are. True. You are.
But anyway, so there, I might have to come back in future mic this, because I don't know if we're going to actually do it or not. But, you know, it's possible, because there are two things that I say all the time. The one is literally that, you know, I don't get to play games at TavernCon. I will potentially get to play maybe two or three. I will always allow myself at least one game, but at most I'm getting like two or three games, because I have to be mobile. I have to be taken care of stuff. And then the other thing is that I never play my favorite games, because I like longer, more complex games. We're going to be talking about one later this evening. But Sean basically said, like, why don't we give you a chance to play so it's on the schedule, raising support for Inroads, and you get to play one of your favorite games? I said, this sounds like too good a thing. Like, it seems like something that shouldn't happen. I want to happen, but shouldn't happen. But, so we'll see. Like I said, I might future mic it and say, no, we're scrapping this idea. Or I might say, yeah, we're going to do it, and this is what it costs to get these tickets.
It's going to work.
Hey, kids, it is in fact me, Future Mike, summoned from the ether when Past Mike said my name three times. I'm here to announce the fact that we will indeed be introducing what I'm calling the President's Table. A $2 ticket will get folks a chance to be one of three people to join me in playing one of my favorite games in the afternoon of TavernCon. And that's actually where you come in. See, this is a group participation project. Whether you're going to be in attendance and want to make sure that the game that you want to play is the one that we play at the President's Table, or you just plan on listening to the podcasts after the fact and want me to talk about a specific game, I think it's only fair that you have the opportunity to influence which game we end up talking about. I'm going to leave it to you, the GSP listening audience. The President's Table game will either be Scythe, Rising Sun, or Blood Rage. What you're going to need to do is comment in the next couple days, because we are only days away from TavernCon actually happening, comment with your vote either in the comments of this episode of the podcast or on your social media of choice. But if you do the social media route, be sure to make sure that you tag it with the TavernCon 2018 hashtag. I'm still a bit leery of this actually working, but who knows, right? Nothing ventured, nothing gained for the ministry. That said, that's pretty much all I got. Future Mike out. But, yeah, so I could easily see myself running either Scythe or Rising Sun as a pay-to-get-in game. Because I love them. I love both of them so much. But, so I'm excited. It, as is always the case with TavernCon, I don't know exactly what we're going to be in for because, and this happens every year, some folks that are regularly, you know, participating in TavernCon, some folks that are there every year for one reason or not, either like a family thing or college things or a job thing, like lots of stuff just said, hey, dude, I'd love to be there, but I can't this year. Yeah. On the other side of the spectrum, to kind of counteract that, though, there's a lot of people who have said, I can't believe I'm finally going to get to go to TavernCon. I'm really excited to go. So I don't know what this is going to look like because yeah, we have this weird conglomeration of groups saying that they're not coming, who always do, and folks who said they've always wanted to but never have been able to, suddenly saying they are. So we will see what this year holds.
It's always awesome to be surprised with more than you expect.
Yeah. Talk about being surprised by more than you suspect, if I can actually use my language. I found today, let's do a little prequel. Like 4 or 5 days ago, like early last week, a kid who I can't even call him a kid anymore. He is a grown man. But he was a kid in my very first youth group that I ran. And he goes, Mike, I think there's something that you're going to have a lot of fun with. I want to send to you. And I said, okay. And so he asked for my address. I gave it to him. And, I didn't think twice about it. I said, oh, okay, it'd be something fun, something nice and small and, you know, a nice little token. Well, so the other night, Susan goes, hey, we've got a package. Did you order something? And I said, no. And she literally, like, grunts as she picks up this box.
So this is after you called Homeland Security.
Yeah. She like strains to pick up this box. And I'm like, what on earth could possibly be in this? And then she goes, oh, there's writing on the side here. And she goes, Kingdom Death? What is this? And I go,
sorry.
I go, oh no. Oh no, no, no. And I open the box and there, looking up at me, is the black on black goodness of the core set of Kingdom Death Monster. I often, when people do these elaborate, like, you know, crazy, insane things that they send us, try to mention them on the podcast. So my buddy Sean, not Sean who works with Inroads, but another guy who spells his name differently. I can't begin to appreciate the fact that he sent me a copy of the core set of Kingdom Death Monster. It will be months before I get this set up and ready to play, but my goodness.
I think you're having a little bit of what I go through when I get a new miniatures game. Play it or paint it.
I literally can't play it. It will take me weeks just to put all these models together.
Yes.
So.
I'd let Brett do it.
Yeah. Oh, he's gonna.
So you might as well. You're just gonna leave it in the box and ship it over to him or something.
No, he's gonna be at TavernCon. I'm going to literally hand it to him. Everything's still in the sprues because I almost had a heart attack with looking at all the figures. I'm like, how bad could it possibly be? Oh, it's a thing. It is a thing. So I wanted to bring it up partly to thank this guy, Sean, for donating it. It still boggles my mind that people donate stuff that large and crazy to us. The other reason I wanted to bring it up was because I posted it on our Inroads Instagram. And if anybody's looking at that Instagram going, man, I can't wait to play Kingdom Death Monster at Tavern Con. Sorry, y'all. It's just not going to happen.
Well, I mean, I had a fairly large package show up at my house the other day.
Yes, you did.
Yes. 65 pounds of package. And, yeah, it was a donation made by Gary Kahn to the our gaming libraries to help add games to them. They sent us 65 pounds worth of games.
So, in case somebody listening has no idea what the logistics of what we refer to as the Inroads Traveling Game Library, basically, you can refer to that as whichever one of us is saying it, like saying those words.
Our personal libraries.
It's our personal game libraries. Because of the fact that, you know, as of this move from Sean and his family, you now have Daniel, who's in Tennessee, you've got me in New Jersey, and now you have Sean out in Seattle. So there is no
get our California guy playing more board games.
No, no, he's fine, and we're going to get into what he's been doing while he's not been on this show.
None of your business. That's what I've been up to. We'll just lay that out right now.
But right? So when
let's talk about Seattle, the fact that, you know, Sean should be, by all rights, playing Shadowrun right now.
He'll be not. If he does not LARP Shadowrun, he's doing it wrong.
Thank you, and good night.
But
full credits.
But Inroads is not responsible if Sean gets pulled over by a cop asking why he's got a katana and a
and elf ears.
Yeah. Oh, Sean would be an orc. Who are you kidding?
That's true, man. He's got the manga size for that. That's so good.
But so yeah, so when Daniel says that the folks at GaryCon donated to expand the traveling library, they literally sent us copies so that Sean, Daniel, and I can have copies of a bunch of different games. So it was an insanely generous donation. If you're in the tavern, you saw Daniel do a pre-unboxing video, which is still hilarious to me, and then double back to do the actual unboxing because there were just that many boxes. But yeah, so that also happened this week, but Let us step away from the oh my goodness I can't believe this happened shenanigans.
I can't believe it happened.
It's true.
I can.
Mr. Romo has been missing in action for a while.
Nah.
And a thing that had I was almost convinced was a thing of myth and legend that these tapes would be hidden away in a vault somewhere only to be found by future generations. Hey, okay. Jeff, what have you got coming up?
Yeah, I don't know. I've been taking a bread baking class. So started with that. I'm trying to bake dice into my bread. I figured that'd be not harmful.
Going to keep it at 300 degrees when you do that.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. It's the balance between the baking of the bread and not melting the dice.
Yeah.
It's hard. It's really hard.
Yeah, that banana nut becomes banana D6.
Banana D6, baby. So, yeah, I went ahead last year, and I think it was about this time that I made the announcement that I wanted to start recording a series called All Bards. You know, a celebration to my love of music, my love of 5e and how diverse it can be, even with a single character class. So the options had been, you know, do all fighters, so, you know, big brawly type stuff. It could be all thieves and have like a nice little heist game. That'd be kind of fun. But the one that kind of kept percolating in my head was an all bards campaign. So we did that. We actually, the goal was to do three tables. I managed to get two tables recorded. And it was about at that time when my real life went upside down. You know, I've done a couple of recordings before for En-ROADS Plays where for the YouTube channel, just talking about, you know, my situation with my mom and how that kind of spun up in June of last year. So I managed to be able to finish two sessions or two tables of all bards. I had to beg off of the third table, unfortunately, and I still owe you guys a game, by the way, if you're listening. But once that was in the can, then I put it away. And it wasn't until this how did I get prompted? I think it was in a Slack channel chat with
Mendix co-creators. I believe it was when you were talking about how awesome it was putting up content for the Min-Max folks, and I said, yes, now we need you to put out content for, you know, the show that you're on.
Right, exactly. To be fair, I don't have to do any editing for the Min-Max podcast, which is nice. So that was just a one-shot session, part of their DN demo series where they're taking their characters and they have somebody come in and do a DMing, you know, and then they go to another DM and then they go to another DM.
And we love those guys, and Jeff did a, you know, killer job, you know, at doing their session. I will make sure that I link the Min-Max session in the show notes so that you guys can go and check it out if you haven't already.
It's a lot of fun. It will harken back to some old stuff that I know these guys will know all about, but I don't want to spoil anything because it comes out at the end. But in any case, yeah, All Bards is back on the table. I have finished the first 5 hours of editing out of roughly 15 hours of content. So as of this time, when this drops, we'll already have released the first Friday set, which is going to be the two session zeros for both tables. And then what will happen is every Friday, I'm going to release a session for one table, then the next, then the next, and then the next. So that way you kind of see them attacking the same situation differently. We'll see how they do some things the same, but I got to tell you, both of them went in different directions. It was pretty cool. Both of them had a ton of fun. At least I had a ton of fun, and they seem to be excited about this finally getting out there. So yeah, looking forward to getting that out on a weekly basis on Fridays. So check our YouTube channel, Inroads Plays.
I'm excited.
Have fun with it.
You can see us doing nothing during lunch for a long time.
I'm looking forward to seeing, cause I was promised a certain dwarf will be making a cameo.
See, what's interesting is that the cameo occurs in correlation with another dwarf bard that's on table two. The band is called The Peace Treaty. And this particular dwarf bard is a big fan of Vaporwave.
Of course he is.
Plays a keytar and wears 80s space moon age dream boots that look awesome.
I support everything about this.
It's incredible. It's incredible. And for however long YouTube will allow me to keep the video up there, I'll have the intro, because both intro series has music, you know, from, you know, different bands. I think one's from the Stranglers, the other one is from ELO. So it's, you know, however long they let it up there, I've given all credit, no possession, that sort of thing. So we'll see how that works. But yeah, we'll start getting those things kicked out here. It's already started this last week, and then we'll keep going weekly until I run out of shows. At the end of this, my goal is to, not goal, but I've already started scripting it, but I wanted to put together a video of my thought process of putting these sessions together, what went into it, the notes that I used, the inspiration that I used, and how that kind of gravitated towards creating the session, the trilogy for each of the tables. So,
well, I think, and we were, you had mentioned in our little group chat as to what, you know, what you think about doing that. I think that it would be great to have that kind of after the fact, to kind of just
absolutely
make, you know, have the whole thing out there, show everything, and then be like, and this is how it happened.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's definitely going to be like a how it's made type thing. And it's going to be spoilerific, so I'll make sure that, yeah, I'm not going to release it until the last video drops. And of course, that'll give me time to finish up the scripting and then record the video and everything. So I got the overlay all set up. I got the method by which I want to record. I've got that all set up. So now it's just about kind of, I want to put it into a cogent order, and I'm trying to revisit the material that I put together a year ago. So it's helpful when I'm going through the videos, because it's just kind of bringing this up. So I've been compiling notes into a little mini notebook. Where did I put that? Oh, boy. I'll find it.
It's in your back pocket.
There. Nope. Ah! It's not a notebook.
It's in the car then.
That's my butt. No, I'm just kidding. Well, I mean, it's back there. Let's move on. Daniel, what have you been up to?
Not much. Working, planning the Boy Scout stuff. And
is there any update on the now infamous Boy Scout game?
I have most of the kids signed up for Sunday afternoon. I don't know why, but I'm still waiting on the custom dice to come in that I got ordered for them. With the Boy Scout logo on them. I mean, they're going to be the Boy Scout tan and have the logo on them. So,
what color is the numbers going to be?
I think she's going to do gold.
Gold or black?
Gold.
Black, I think, would show up. That would pop more.
Yeah, black will pop more, but gold, I think, with the Boy Scout. Yeah, gold or red is a lot using the uniforms, too. So, I could ask for
Look
that.
At us color coordinating.
Huh?
Look at us color coordinating.
I know. It's almost as bad as when we try to do our cooking shows.
Don't remind me of the days of the intros being basically discussions of food.
Well, hey, wait a minute. In all honesty, though, you weren't here.
That's true.
You weren't here to stop us. Okay? We won't take responsibility for our inability to have accountability. I mean, come on.
But no.
When I look at Daniel and Daniel says that's a good idea.
Yeah.
He just gives me the nod, yeah. Right? He's just that nod. Yeah. Yeah.
That's like, yep, we're doing this.
Here we go.
Okay. So before we get into kind of the big game that I want to talk about, we want to get into the one and only official segment of Game Store Profits, which is the Archive Dive, because the new game that I brought is, it's not like brandy new, but it's fairly new. So we want to make sure that we do the Archive Dive, which is kind of digging back in, like, we don't go like way hardcore all the time. A lot of the times we're within 5 or 6 years. But we like to go and kind of go past the time frame that the hype train stops for even the most well-known games, past the time where, you know, everybody's talking about a title and it just kind of fades away, because there are just so many games continuously hitting the market that it's really easy to forget about something that's even just within 2 years.
It's a saturation point.
Exactly. So we want to make sure that people who are getting into the hobby, especially because of the fact that so many people who listen to us are either new to gaming or have just been living in this space that's kind of gaming adjacent, where they want to know about what's happening but don't really have the time or availability to get into it themselves. We want to make sure that we bring up some of the titles that we love that are harder. If you're new into this stuff, you're not going to hear about them. So the one that I picked for this particular session is a bit of an odd duck for me, because it's only recently that I've had any love for what they refer to as trick-taking games. If you've never played a trick-taking game, I'm pretty confident you have, because one of the most prominent card games that I played ever since I could hold cards in my hand is a game called Hearts. So you're either trying to, depending on how you want to play it, you're either trying to play either all the highest number cards of every suit to try and get every card, or you're trying to kind of play the lower ones to not try to get it. With Hearts, you know, you want to have the lowest score possible, so every heart you get is giving you more points, so you might want to avoid that. Or there's an option where you shoot the moon, where it's like, I'm going to get all of them, and if you are successfully able to get every point card, then you get 0 points and everybody else gets points. That is essentially a trick-taking game. Now, they take a lot of different forms, but that's probably my go-to to explain to people, because if you've ever cracked open a pack of 52 regular everyday playing cards, you've probably played Hearts at one point. And the game that I'm bringing today is called Njet. Njet is, in a lot of ways, that. It is exactly that. It is, you know, you're trying to, in this particular game, you're trying to just get as many card sets as possible. You're trying to win as many tricks, which is what that is. You're trying to win as many of them as possible. And
I just think of the artwork for that game. It just makes me laugh so
hard. I love that artwork.
The artwork is phenomenal, and it's sad because it has nothing to do with the gameplay. But it's the it is all these amazingly done animals in weird Russian outfits and military gear and ridiculousness. There's like a noir detective looking. Yeah, they're so good. But again, the game itself is just I'm going to play larger numbers than you to win. So you might be asking, what sets this apart? What makes this different from all the other trick-taking games? And the answer to that is that before, like with hearts, you know, the bad suit you don't want is hearts. The bad card you really don't want is the Queen of Spades. Like, you know that going in. With Niet, before you start actually playing cards and taking tricks, you have a voting stage. And in the voting stage, you are basically saying, no, that's not going to be the case. So you can actually choose, like, no, that suit is not going to be the Trump suit. No, when you, for each trick, it's not going to be worth 6 points. That's not going to be what happens. So hence why the game is called Niet. You're basically saying, no, this thing's not going to be true. The thing that I really, really enjoy about that is the fact that it sets up strategies. Because there have been times when I'm playing Niet and I'm looking and I'm like, I'm not going to take a single trick this hand. My hand is garbage. I'm going to win nothing. So what I do then is try to make sure that all of the high point value options are eliminated. Because if I'm not going to be getting a lot of tricks, then the people who are certainly not going to be getting points for it. Like, right. you can set yourself up and you're working with a partner, and like so many other games where you're working with a partner, you're kind of judging like what they're going for and what they've got without giving it away to the other players. It really is, the addition of this voting phase really does take what is a basic trick taking game and elevates it to this interesting kind of playoff. And I also like the fact that you're not going to be playing with the same person every round. Every round, you, whoever the lead player is, chooses who their partner is going to be. And I don't know, all of this stuff kind of leads into, it just feels like there's more strategy, there's more thought, there's more development than just, I played higher numbers than you.
Right.
And so, like, I think the reason it took me this long to get into trick-taking games is because for so long, most of the trick-taking games I had was just that. It was just different ways of playing higher numbers than the other people. But Niet was one of the first ones that made me go, oh, there's other things we can do here.
So did Niet, like, lead you into a particular game after that? Did it kind of leapfrog you into something that you really enjoyed more, or has Niet just been sticking with you?
Nothing specifically, but Niet made me open to new ideas. Like, before, when I, like, okay, it's a trick-taking game. But Niet made me think about games like Bottle Imp. Niet made me think about the really interesting trick-taking game that's out there now, which I thought was going to be impossible. It's a two-player trick-taking game called The Fox in the Forest. I never would have touched Fox in the Forest if it weren't for Niet. But that game has done some really interesting things with this basic trick-taking mechanic.
And now, we never played a lot of trick-taking games in, like, Hearts or nothing like that growing up, so I was never really attracted to them, per se. I mean, how hard is the game itself to learn?
The game itself is super easy.
Okay.
Because It literally does break down to, do you have the higher number?
Yeah.
And I'm oversimplifying it, because there is strategy to when do you play certain things. Because if you don't have a card in the suit that got led, which is the first player, whatever suit they play.
Right.
If you don't have a card in that suit, you can just start unloading your garbage on them. So there is kind of, you know, strategy just in the basic stuff of playing trick-taking games. But at its core, the game itself is very simple. So it's really not something that you have to sweat too hard to get into playing. It's like so many of the other games that I play where, you know, it's really easy to learn, but really complicated to master. Because I'll tell you how much I enjoy trick-taking games after Niet. I'm rubbish at it. I feel bad every time I nominate who's going to be my partner. I'm like, I'm sorry, you're probably not going to do well this round.
Well, that's cool, though. I mean, if it's something that kind of gets you into a different, I don't want to say genre, but if it gets you into that mode of saying, okay, you know, all these games are not bad. It's not like you're going to find, like, a Monopoly amalgam and say, okay, Monopoly's okay. But at the very least, with trick-taking games, it opens that up.
Right, and these
this is what they could be.
These are never going to be my favorite games, but it at bare minimum yet made me realize just because they're not going to be my favorite games doesn't mean that the mechanic as a whole is not worth pursuing. That there are good games, there are good experiences to be had in this genre of game that I didn't think there were.
And what that good experience means, that if somebody were to propose, let's play Niet, you know, they bring it up on the table, you're like,
yeah, absolutely, sure, let's
do it. Right? So that's cool. That's cool. That means that it's a good thing to be able to say that, you know, that something before Niet might have had a trick-taking game come up, and you're like, okay, sounds all right.
Oh, yeah. Before I got Niet, if I recommended a trick-taking game, it was basically because I feel really bad saying this, but this is 100% truth. I'm pulling back the curtain, opening up the gates, and letting y'all know, if I recommended a trick-taking game to you before I got Niet, it was probably because I didn't think you actually enjoyed playing games. It was probably because I was just going for the lowest common denominator.
Look, this is a game you can take to a party, and if grandma wants to play, she can play.
You like hearts, huh? I bet you like Monopoly, too.
It used to literally be my there's no one who doesn't have some basic touch point as to how to play these games, so I'm just going to bring this one out. So, cool, we can actually swing it to the game that I kind of want to jump off from and talk to you guys about, because something that struck me about this game is, and it really kind of dovetails into the video game world as well today, and Charlie's talking about the idea of expectations here, because I got the Fallout board game.
I'm not talking to you right now.
Why is that?
That's a very narrow view, Daniel.
Fallout is one of my favorite games, video games.
Oh, I'm with you.
And I've been wanting to try each individual Fallout game, the miniatures game, this game.
Yes, to be clear, if you've been looking, because they're pretty close to back-to-back, two Fallout games came out. Right. One is a miniatures war game. It was put out by Modiphius.
Right.
I'd love to say I have that one, for no other reason than I want that Deathclaw figurine.
It's expensive.
But it's expensive, and thus I don't have it. What I do have is the Fallout board game. And this game, for the longest time, I knew I needed to have it. Because I pretty much, sadly, I haven't been able to play Fallout 4. But literally every other previous Fallout game, including things like Tactics and Brotherhood of Steel, I have played every one of them to completion. Yeah. So when I heard that they were making a Fallout board game where you were exploring the various wastelands, because you can actually set up, it gives you various scenarios for all of the different settings. There's a Vegas setting, there's a Capital Wasteland setting, and the one that they kind of recommend you start with is the Commonwealth, aka the Boston one. And the idea of being able to be a wasteland wanderer, going through and exploring, randomly coming up on insane stuff. Like, I was super happy. And
did I just hear your voice quiver?
Yes,
with
I
tears?
Heard it.
You did.
What?
Fallout.
What?
I have literally been playing Fallout since I was like a teenager. Like an early, early teenager. So, like, this game franchise and I have history. And, I'm not gonna lie, I did get a little giddy when they're like, you can choose, you know, who you want to be in the game. And one of the options was Vault Dweller. And I'm like, oh my goodness, look at him. And, but yeah, so the short kind of condensed version of this game, it's a game about trying to build influence. You are trying to do quests and do various activities and follow story arcs to get enough influence to win the game. The amount is different depending on how many players you have. I, to date, because this is a brand new game for me, have only played it solo. And when playing it solo, you have to get 11 points. And I have yet to do that. The highest I've gotten is 8 so far. And it's interesting because you're exploring these tiles. It's the board is completely modular. Depending on your scenario, there are certain things that are visible from the beginning. So like when I had the Commonwealth, you had like base camp, you had Boston City proper, and you had, what's it? Again, I haven't played 4, so it's Diamond City or whatever it's called. And those were visible, but every other section of the board was randomly laid out. And so you're kind of just exploring, and you'll find quests like go visit this or kill a synth or all this stuff. And you're trying to do these quests that unlock different stuff. They unlock different stats because, yes, you do have the special stats in this game. You are unlocking different items to do cool stuff. You are getting allies. And it's all stuff from the game itself, which is fantastic. And so, like, I'm just giddy as I'm playing this game, as I'm, you know, zapping, you know, bloat flies and all various critters and coming up against a Protectron robot. And I did, you know, almost wet myself the first time I flipped over a monster token and it was a Deathclaw. And like, there's all sorts of craziness going on here. And the way everything works is that a lot of this, some of the stuff is very simple. Go here or do this. And then the next quest kind of pops up. And the way they do quests is interesting too, because it's literally like find card number 123 or whatever. And so these things do have kind of an arc, like a development arc as you're going through. And, so the way they do a lot of the stuff, and it reminded me so much of playing a role-playing game, you have 3d6s.
All right.
And on these dice, you have the various, if you've ever played the old Fallout games, you know that the little vault boy that shows up on your display, that shows all his limbs in various states.
I'm A-okay.
Yeah. Like, so it's like arms, head, body, legs, everything. The places you've been hurt, it has those. And when you get into a fight, there are two symbols you're looking for. Where on the body it's being hit.
Sorry.
As well as... where did the rad scorpion touch you? Yes. But
okay, sorry.
But you're doing that, and you're trying to make sure that like the weak points on the creature are hit by what you're doing. Also, you're attacking by how much the creature is hitting you, and there are little kind of like hit symbols that, you know, that's how much the creature is hitting you back. And those dice are also used when it's like you're about to try a quest. It'll tell you you need to get 4 successes, and you have to you roll the dice to see how many of those little hit symbols you bring up. So a common thing that I hear about when people don't like this game is that it can be seen as entirely luck-based, because those dice... There were times when I just nailed it and every die had 2 hit symbols and I was just clearing everything. And there were times when I shouldn't have even bothered. And, you know, that's life in the wasteland, kids. I could easily see how that could be frustrating to some people because there's so much hidden information. It's near impossible to plan. The dice can just completely mess you over. But I found myself going, I'm a role player. This sounds like a Friday night to me. This is what we do. And so this pretty much felt to me like a hybrid of a board game and a role-playing game. So I can...
Now, you know those are my favorites.
I know.
You know that.
So what I could easily see as I'm playing this, and this is kind of where I want to lead into some discussion about the idea of expectation. I can see if you go in wanting a hardcore board game, this would not scratch that itch. Because there's too much weirdness. There's too much fiddliness. It's too much randomness. If you want a hardcore role-playing game experience, I don't think that would scratch the itch either. Because if you want a pure role-playing experience, the quests are too limited. The quests basically go, do you want option A, B, or C? And a role player is like, what about Q? You know, yeah. And the idea of just randomly wandering to gain influence, that's not what role-playing games do. That's what board games do. And so if your expectation is to go purely board game or purely role-playing game, this is going to be a miserable experience because it does neither of those completely. But if you go in saying, oh, okay, this is going to be a little bit of Fallout fan service, let's just call it what it is, wrapped around this weird kind of hybrid, which allows you to enter into the good parts of both of those and kind of just hand wave the stuff that's frustrating about both of those. If you're willing to enter into it, you can get something really interesting out of this game. When I posted that I was playing Fallout last night, a bunch of people are like, I thought about getting that, or I thought about it, but it just sounds awful, and these guys reviewed it poorly. And I'm like, you know what? After playing it, I completely get why people wouldn't like this game. I completely understand why this would be rubbish to some people. I'm going to tell you, I loved this, and I desperately want to play it with more people. And I think it really did come down to not being caught up on my expectations of what this is. Because I don't know about you guys. Have you ever entered into something where, like, you expect it to be one thing? And even though the product or the entertainment or the whatever that you got wasn't bad, the fact that it wasn't what you were expecting, did that taint it? Because I can even give one that's not role-playing related.
I can give one here recently that's video game related. We started a gaming group at my work, and so everybody decided, let's play State of Decay 2. Well, we didn't really understand how the multiplayer went. We thought it went like 7 Days to Die, where you could run a server all the time and just jump in and work on your structures and stuff like that against the zombie hordes. And when we realized that's not how it went, like, half the guys were like, man, you know, this sucks. But now they're finally getting into it after a while, and me being one of them, because, you know, I was kind of bummed out that we couldn't have a server going. So, but yeah, it took us a while, and once we started getting the hang of it, it's actually turned out to be a very enjoyable game.
There was this one time my wife was, you know, she took me to a Spanish tapas bar, and, you know, it's tapas. You know, it's delicious.
Yeah.
But I was like, this isn't a Taco Bell. You told me this was Taco Bell. You know, you get surprised.
Well, one for me, and I had to explain myself a bunch of times, it took me forever to give the movie that a lot of people said was like one of the most interesting kind of Oscar-worthy superhero movies. It took me forever to give Logan any credence.
Get out of here.
No,
I'm sorry.
And see,
I'm off the show. I'm out.
No, so here's the thing.
Daniel, you're off the show.
Here's why. Here's why it took me forever. Because everybody who came out of that movie is like, this movie's awesome. This movie's fantastic. You need to watch it. I go, I can't. Not yet. And they're like, why not? I go, because this movie sold me a bill of goods that it did not do good on. And it was easier for me to explain this to comic book nerds than it was to just people who like good movies. Because, guys who are entrenched in the comic book world, when I said I was told this movie was Old Man Logan, the movie.
Terrible. Who told you that, bag of lies?
Lots of people. And so I went in expecting Old Man Logan. If you don't know comic books, Old Man Logan is a lot of the same stuff is happening. Wolverine is older. His healing ability is fading because he's older. But whereas Logan had him with this girl and he's trying to protect her and all this stuff, Logan, the Old Man Logan, is basically Wolverine and a blind Hawkeye traveling across the country, taking out the Marvel Universe's biggest villains who happen to now be in control of sections of the United States.
Hold on. Don't do this a disservice. Don't forget that they are traveling in the Spider-Man.
They are traveling. Yes, this is true.
Okay.
And please. And so you get these guys like going after Kingpin and Red Skull and Hulk. Hulk, who has gone absolutely mad, and his family has become inbred, and they control the West Coast.
Inbred cannibals.
Yes, please. Inbred cannibals.
There you go.
So, when I first heard about Logan, I was told, this is the Old Man Logan movie. Mm-hmm. And I'm like,
I can see how that sucks, especially when you get a chance to read the Old Man Logan story. I mean, it's got everything that you'd want in a post-apocalyptic whatever, book, movie, whatever, at least in me.
I don't even especially like Wolverine as a character, but I love...
I'm sorry.
But I love Old Man Logan.
No, we're through.
That's it. Podcast is over.
Shut it down.
We're done.
Podcast is over.
So that's the kind of thing I'm talking about here. The idea of expectation, which Logan's a fantastic movie. There's a reason why they were saying, okay, this might be the first superhero movie to win awards. Like, it's a great movie, but because of the fact that I was sold on this being the Old Man Logan movie, and it most certainly wasn't, it tainted the whole experience for me.
I'll add this, and it means, it doesn't even make any sense to add this here, but I'm going to go ahead and add it anyway, because it's me. If you get a chance, watch Old Man, or dang it, you got me calling it. both of you, roll credits, we're done. Take a chance and watch Logan in black and white. When you buy the digital, there is a Logan Noir version, and it's not just black and white. They actually use like the brightened soft shades and the oversaturated lighting that goes along with like your old Noir films. It adds another layer that I didn't think was possible. It's pretty
cool. Yeah.
That's me. That's just me.
And so I got to thinking when it came to this Fallout game, when it got to just that idea of having those moments where my previous expectation tainted what was a good thing, but just wasn't the thing I wanted. Yeah. As is our wont on this podcast, we turn this stuff on the concept of faith. And I think that something that we're seeing over and over again as people are leaving churches in droves is that I think it's this idea of expectation that we are sold a bill of goods sometimes, not universally, but a lot of times our church leaders are the people that we respect sometimes sell us a bill of goods, especially when that thing is, love God, follow God, trust God, and everything will be great. Yeah. When you are sold that kind of bill of goods, that's expectation. When you start hearing phrases like God would never do that for stuff that God clearly does all throughout the Bible. So like there's so many times when I think that some of the reasons we've become disillusioned with the concept of faith and even the idea of church and religion itself, because if there's anything that most people are burned out on, even a lot of Christians are burnt out on certain aspects of church and religion, so even Christians are getting burnt out on certain aspects of the religious aspect and the church aspect, because they have this expectation of what church is supposed to be, and they're not seeing it. So I don't know. I kind of want to put it to you guys as to like, do you feel that yourself sometimes? Like when it comes to church and faith and everything like that?
I think when I first was brought into faith, I think I got done right. And I'll explain it in this way, that I was given the book of John and I was given the book of Job.
That is a 1-2 punch and a half right there.
It was the same time. And I was told, you know, read, you know, X amount of chapters and verse in John, and then I want you to switch over to Job. Because the beginning of John is, you know, the outline of relationship between Christ and the Father, and leads into, you know, wanting to learn more. And the particular version of the Bible I was given had a good amount of commentary and context. I think it was a precursor to the archaeological Bible. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of that one. That one's pretty awesome. Check it out if you haven't yet. And so the concept kind of drew me towards, you know, reading a little bit of the Genesis account, reading a little bit of, you know, First and Second Kings, that sort of thing. But then when I jumped into Job, I started realizing, okay, you need to be loved because you need to be loved through the things that this life is going to put in front of you, that God is going to put in front of you. So I don't think I ever got the bait and switch, as it were. I don't think I ever got that with faith. And I think that the wonderful thing about, I'm saying wonderful, the wonderful thing about this last year in my life and my mom having to get put into a nursing home, all of the things that led up to this was toughening me for the next thing. Right. And so every single thing that happened, whether it was dealing with my mom, it was prepping me for, you know, stepping out in faith at work, and for stepping out in faith and going over into the Middle East, and then stepping out in faith and coming back and trying to sort out how my wife and how our lives had changed so much. And I think hadn't it not been for all of the things before, that's not religion-based, that's faith-based, that is, in the truest sense of the phrase, not in the phrase the media uses, but in the truest sense of the phrase, being faith-based, carried us through, my wife and I, carried us through and said, okay, on the other side of this is going to be more troubles, so expect it to get a little tougher, because you're working out these faith muscles, you're getting tougher in your faith to where you're going to be able to handle a little bit more. So, I guess, you know, there's... And it's unfortunate that we hear about how people are leaving the church in, you know, in whatever numbers they may be here in, you know, Western culture. I think the big precursor to that was Europe, you know, going over and visiting Europe and seeing how empty a lot of the churches are. But the flip side to that is that the true faith-based message, you know, this is from experience of being in the Middle East, is exploding there. The idea of God wanting to hold your hand and bring you through the difficult troubles, it's exploding. I mean, more people, the group that I worked with, when there is at least first contact with somebody, there's an 80% chance that they are moving into faith and they're going to accept Christ. It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. It's astounding. And it's because they are leading with that John Job, you know, thing. And they're meeting people where they're at. And they're saying, okay, you need to understand this comes with this, yeah. You know, the good and the bad.
With me, when I came to Christ, I wasn't really sold a bill of goods because I was by myself and I was at rock bottom. So anything better than what I was doing, anything at that point would have been better than what I was at. And so from that point, you know, we got into a church. You know, I just fell back into the same old with going to my mom's church and for a while until me and Jessica could find a church. And once we got into that, you know, we just got to a point where our main goal was to serve the community. That was it. And it was, you know, God gives us so much because we have to give it to other people. And that's just the way we've always lived since then. And, you know, I wasn't, you know, I people are like, you know, God will never give you more than you can handle. Them.
That is the exact opposite. Like I love it every time somebody brings up that old adage, I'm be like, y'all clearly have not actually read your Bibles then,
right? And I drop it. I've actually, you know, bull hockey on them and said, listen, God loves giving us more than we can handle because he loves hearing us call out to him. And you know, we can't do it without God. That's the whole point. And he likes to remind us constantly that we can't do it without him.
It's all these verses that people quote, and they leave out the other half.
Yeah.
Like, is it, which part of, is it 1st or 2nd Peter when he's talking about, you know, men, you know, women submit to your husbands and blah, blah, blah. But then they forget the other half where he commands that men sacrifice yourselves for your wife and your family as Christ sacrificed himself for the church. So you boys need to be willing to die.
My favorite one is when, you know, everyone loves that, the passage that says, you know, I know the plans I have for you, plans to prosper and not to harm you. Folks love that passage. And I don't want to be that guy who kind of poo-poos your encouragement, but that verse was sandwiched between a bunch of stuff where God is basically saying, so you're going to be in captivity for generations now. I hope you're okay with that. I know what I'm doing, just so you know.
Yeah.
And that's the whole point, right? Is that we are so, that actually illustrates how God at that time when inspiring that word and when he's saying those things, he knows our nature to focus on the one thing that we want to see, which is the prosper. Right. You're going to prosper us. That's what you said. No. You forgot A and C. You're just looking at B. You need to look at the whole sentence of what I'm telling you. Yeah. And that's our nature, right? Yeah. We want to look towards those things that are going to say, oh man, that's the game I want to play.
Yeah.
You know, that's all I see. Right.
I think for me, the biggest thing about managing expectations is the idea that I came to realize early on that I am not the lead character in this story. And, you know, so much of how I try to view things, I joke about being the bard, but there's a reason why I kind of took that on myself. It's because I view everything through the lens of storytelling, through the idea of narrative. I've been one of those people who slogged through Joseph Campbell to find out the nature of how we tell the stories we tell. And
Silmarillion.
Yeah. Oh my. But I came to the realization fairly early in this, you know, when the Venn diagram of storyteller and person of faith and leader of the church kind of overlapped, and that little, as soon as that middle section started developing, I realized I am not the lead character in this story. And the second that became my framework, the expectations started to fall away. Because ultimately, it's not about whether God's taking care of me or not. Because God is the ultimate, the lead character. That Christ himself is the one who is the focal point. That the rest of us are about the business of developing the story and filling in the NPCs, as it were, of this larger narrative. And so my expectation of comfort, my expectation of all, now, to be 100% clear, that does not mean that there is not frustration, that there is not anger, that there is not suffering and confusion, because all that stuff still hangs around.
Right.
But it just means that it has to be tied together with this knowledge that I'm not where this story hinges on. And I think that a lot of the frustrations we get are when we expect that, you know, that whole idea of I can't believe that a God would do that. And I'm like, why wouldn't he? But I think so many of the frustrations we have are wrapped up in this knowledge of, oh, you know, this story is supposed to be about me, that God's supposed to take care of me and God's supposed to protect me. It's I don't want to limit it to us, but it definitely is this American individualism.
Yeah.
That says my faith is about me and God demonstrates that he is a God of love and worthy to be trusted because he's taking care of me.
That middle-class American Jesus.
Yeah.
And the tough thing too is that it's born out of something in my head is good in that, and hear me out, it's the exploration, it's the adventurers, it's the, you know, that late 19th century, you know, roaring 20s adventurer mentality that, you know, because God is with me and he's writing the story, I can afford to take some risks. I can step out in faith a little bit more. And my heart is that, you know, God's at my side and I can do these things. But then along the way, we start, you know, like we've been talking about, we start focusing on certain things. And in the case of us, we focus on that.
Yeah. Right.
We say, oh, we start nixing the idea that, oh, we don't really need God because everything's going so well here and, you know, everything's going so great. And then as soon as something bad happens, we're like, oh, it's God's fault, you know? And it's like, no, God's just trying to remind you that, hey, you need me. And it's okay to need me. It's absolutely okay. Because during the times when, you know, things are rough, you have somebody to turn to. And when times are doing really well, you have somebody to praise and thank. And heck, I'm learning these last few months to thank him for the tough times, because I would be nowhere near the man that I am now had it not been for the tough times.
Yeah, I think, I know I've referenced this in previous episodes, but it's been a long time, so I'm going to bring it up again. I can't remember exactly. I think it was in college. I don't think it was in seminary. I think it was before that. I think it was in college, where I was talking to a missionary, and he says, it's really interesting to hear Americans talk about the problem of evil, because so much of American church, American theology, it's all about the problem of evil. Why would a good God allow terrible things to happen? He goes, in a lot of places in the world, especially poorer nations in the world, It's not a problem, because hardship, pain, death, these are expected. So anything that isn't that is a tremendous blessing. But when your framework is, I have an expectation of being taken care of, I have an expectation that I'm going to live a long life and healthy life and have a family and do all this stuff, I have an expectation of being able to afford certain things and I do my job and I get paid and everything's going to be fine. When you have that expectation, the idea that God would allow evil things to happen to people is a struggle, because we expect nothing but good things. Good by our definition, not good by God's definition, because God literally is what defines good. His actions are good. But we want to see good as our good. So again, it all wraps up into this concept of expectation. When our expectation is that God is going to take care of us in a very practical, physical kind of way. Tomorrow, the day after we're recording this, I'm going to be going to the funeral of an amazing woman of God. All of her kids went through my youth group when I was leading the youth group. I'm going to her funeral tomorrow. And I watched as cancer ate away at her. It is hard for me because of the fact that I view this understanding, because I am who I am. I do expect that God's going to take care of us. And so I do expect that this, you know, powerful woman of faith would be able to have been able to see a healing and to see the Spirit of God move and taking care of this, but it didn't. But my expectation is that God is in the business of redeeming awful. He doesn't plan awful, but he redeems it. And that, the expectation framework. And it's from stupid, simple stuff like, I can now watch a kick butt movie about, you know, Hugh Jackman tearing guys up with claws, all the way up to, I can look death in the face and still be angry and pissed that it happened, but still acknowledge that God can be good even in this.
Amen. Amen.
All right, y'all. I think I don't know where we would go beyond that.
There's nowhere to go but up.
Yeah. So, again, if you're listening to this and you're in the New Jersey area or you want to be, I will put a link to the TavernCon page that we have. Feel free to stop by. We would be happy to have
TavernCon!
You. If you'd like to support us another way, there's other ways on our site you can do that as well, to support what we're doing at En-ROADS, because one of the things that is now official, we have a hotel room, we have badges, it's happening. We the En-ROADS team is going to our one convention this year, which is PAX Unplugged in November. So you can plan on, if you're going to be in that convention, you can plan on hanging out with us. But it also requires that we be able to pay for all this stuff that we're doing. So if you want to donate, we would greatly appreciate it. I don't know of anything else specific about that. I'm sure that the next episode we have will either be in whole or at least in part me talking about, hopefully how well TavernCon went. You can also, because I'm doing newsy related stuff here at the end, I will tell you that the very first episode of what I've referred to as the Bard and Bible, our other podcasts, our very more blatantly religious podcast, the Bard and Bible Wandering Bards Guild, Ashley Mowers from MinMax Podcast killed it with the opening salvo of the Wandering Bards Guild. That is up already. And we're going to be having, by the time this goes up, either shortly after this goes up or within days of this going up, I'm going to have the next edition, which is Thomas Kohler, who is just an amazing guy. He's been part of the regulars forever. He's written for the site, and he is going to come up with the next one. So be looking for that. And we've still got more, because I like the idea of having you guys hear different voices, and I like the fact that during this TavernCon time of the year, I don't have to worry about recording or editing another podcast.
There you go.
Well, we know that's your favorite thing to do.
Yeah. Recording, yes. Editing, not so much. All right. I think it only fitting that we have the Romo back. I only think it's fitting, and we're going to see if he remembers how to do this. Hey, Jeff, you want to wrap us up?
Certainly. A nice little bow. All right, you guys. Always remember that God is the game master, and no matter how the dice fall, the game plays on.